He's handsome and rugged. He lives in a world of galloping horses, open spaces, and blood-red sunsets. He's the Marlboro Man, and he transformed an obscure cigarette into the best-selling brand in history. Critics say that's a dubious achievement. Today, 13% of all teenagers smoke, and more than half of them smoke Marlboro. As part of Present at Creation, a series exploring the origins of American cultural icons, NPR's Kathleen Schock reports on the man known the world over as a symbol of the American West.
Philip Morris began marketing Marlboros in the U.S. back in the 1920s, and not the way you might imagine. They were touted not for tough guys, but for elegant ladies.
Escape from the commonplace. Try Marlboro. Marlboro for luxury unmatched by any other cigarette. Marlboro offers you a choice of ivory tips or plain ends.
But the lady cigarette never really caught on. And by the mid-1950s, links between smoking and cancer were scaring smokers into switching to new filtered brands. Philip Morris didn't have one, so it used the name Marlboro to launch a filtered cigarette with a whole new image and hired legendary ad man Leo Burnett. Media scholar Stuart Ewan of Hunter College says Burnett was helping to revolutionize advertising.
When Burnett comes along, it's advertising is still very much word-driven, text-driven, argument-driven. Burnett's feeling is, don't waste your time making arguments. If you can touch the right buttons, if you can create the stimulus that will affect the desired response, then the advertising is doing its job for you.
Burnett's job was to find a way to make filtered cigarettes appeal to men. In this 1972 documentary, Burnett recalled that the biggest hurdle was that people thought filtered cigarettes were for sissies. So he and his employees began brainstorming.
I said, what's the most masculine symbol you can think of? Right off the top of his head, one of these writers spoke up and said, a cowboy. I said, that's for sure.
They sketched a cowboy, added a picture of the new red and white Marlboro flip-top box, and wrote a little copy.
And we slapped this together in a matter of less than 24 hours, I would say. The art director brought it in, showed it to me, and I just jumped out of my chair. I mean, I've been in the advertising business quite a while, but this is one of the greatest things I'd ever seen. Every instinct I had told me that this was it. And I was so enthusiastic. We were much smaller in those days, but I started running up and down the hall showing it to people. I was so proud of it.
The cowboy was only one type of Marlboro Man in the early years. Other manly Marlboro Men were shown fishing, hunting, working on cars, and flying small planes. All the early Marlboro Men sported tattoos. Mark Crispin Miller is a media studies professor at New York University.
It was an indication that there had been something in the Marlboro Man's past that was more romantic than the life that he was leading now.
Miller says the ads resonated with men who were feeling stifled.
The large population of white-collar males in the United States, a generation of men, many of whom had served in World War II, who were now stuck behind desks in jobs that were quite unfulfilling, in large commercial bureaucracies that weren't terribly romantic.
The ad campaign was such a hit that sales of Marlboros skyrocketed. By 1957, the company sold three times as many cigarettes every day as it did in all of 1953. But then the industry suffered another jolt. More studies linking smoking and cancer. Again, Mark Crispin Miller.
But for decades, the only major medium that would regularly and audibly cover the news about smoking as a health risk was the Reader's Digest. And that was because DeWitt Wallace had a bee in his bonnet about this issue. He had a sense of mission about telling his readers in the United States about the risks of smoking. But all the other media, print and broadcast, were far too dependent on the advertising revenues of the tobacco companies.
For a time, Philip Morris turned to softer ads. Some featured the sultry Julie London, reminding jittery smokers that smoking could be relaxing.
Why don't you settle back and have a full-flavored smoke? Settle back with a Marlboro.
But Jack Landry, then brand manager at Philip Morris, was eager to return to the cowboy. In this 1972 company film, he explained why.
In a world that was becoming increasingly complex and frustrating for ordinary man, the cowboy represented an antithesis. A man whose environment was simplistic and relatively pressure-free. He was his own man, in a world he owned.
By the early 1960s, the Marlboro Man's world was unmistakably the American West.
This is Marlboro Country, where a good colt is as important today as it was 100 years ago.
In addition to real landscapes, ads began featuring real cowboys. Bob Norris was one of the first. He says a team from the ad agency brought some models down to his ranch, along with some brand new Western outfits for them to put on.
They took the clothes out of the truck, you know, and they were throwing them down in the dirt, you know, kind of make them look dusty. You know, actually, Neil McBain with Leo Burnett Company out of Chicago, he looked at me and said, Norris, you're already dirty, we'll just use you.
Another rancher, Herf Ingersoll, appeared in Marlboro print ads throughout the 1970s. He leafs through pictures of himself leaning against a chuck wagon, dragging a Christmas tree across a snow-covered field, and lighting up in a stable.
They don't want no smiles or laughing or anything. It's, you gotta look serious. And here I'm looking kind of, looking a little ornery there.
Ingersoll still raises cattle in Montana, though he's traded in his horses for an all-terrain vehicle.
See there, I got all the cows moved already.
He doesn't smoke anymore either.
Well, I was always getting hollered at, and I couldn't smoke in the house. My wife would throw me out if I did, so I just made up my mind I wasn't going to smoke anymore, and that was it.
Two other Marlboro men, Wayne McLaren and David McLean, died of lung cancer. While he was sick, McLaren testified in favor of anti-smoking legislation. McLean's widow sued. Since the tobacco settlement, the Marlboro Man has vanished from billboards and many magazines in the U.S., and Philip Morris won't talk about him anymore. Kathleen Chalk, NPR News, Washington.
Pictures of some of the Marlboro Men are at npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.